Hey there, Sports History fan. Arnie Chapman here from the Sports History Network. Now, before you jump into this episode, I wanted to share with you an exciting giveaway we have going on with Home Field Apparel. We have a digital $50 gift card to homefieldapparel.com for one lucky fan of the Sports History Network. All you got to do is head over to sportshistorynetwork.com/giveaways to sign up. Again, that's sportshistorynetwork.com/giveaways.
The jersey number 26 has some great players that wore it in NFL history. And today, we have an expert to help us pick a top 10 best players in NFL history that wore number 26. Chris Willis of NFL Films joins us in just a moment. This is the Pigskin Daily History Dispatch, a podcast that covers the anniversaries of American football events throughout history on a day-to-day basis. This is your host, Darren Hayes, and we're podcasting from the Pigpen on America's North Shore, bringing you the memories of the gridiron one day at a time. So with Gene and Mike Monroe, as well as Jason Neff supplying us with the great tunes, let's go no huddle through today's top stories of American football history.
This podcast is part of the Sports History Network, your headquarters for the yesteryear of your favorite sport. You can learn more at sportshistorynetwork.com.
Hello, my football friends. This is Darren Hayes of PigskinDispatch.com, and welcome to another special bonus edition of the Pigpen on the Pigskin Daily History Dispatch podcast. This episode of the Football by Numbers is focused on the best NFL players that ever wore the number 26 in the NFL. This is a number with some big names attached to it in NFL history. But I'm quite fortunate tonight because I have an expert to join me in this endeavor, and he is no stranger to studying topics about the NFL. Yes, we are joined by Chris Willis, an accomplished author of with multiple books on NFL subjects, such as Red Grange, Joe Carr, Dutch Clark, just to name a few. And did I mention he has maybe one of the best jobs ever, as he is the head of NFL Films Research Library. As a matter of fact, with NFL Films, he has been nominated for a couple Emmys and even won the award for his work on the 2016 season's Hard Knocks program on the Houston Texans. Chris Willis, welcome to the Pigpen.
It's nice to be here. So thanks for having me on. I'm excited about talk about some football history with you.
Oh, we're excited to talk about, too, with the number 26s. We have a tough job tonight. But before we get to that, I'd like to just talk to you a little bit about your job, because it is very interesting to me, and I'm sure to the listeners. It just makes our ears perk up for football fans. Are you able to share with us what a normal day looks like as being the head of the NFL Research Library for NFL Films?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, I started in 1996, so it's been 25 years with NFL Films. And my mainly day-to-day chores are just helping the producers find the research for their projects. So, you know, whether it, you know, it's a documentary or a short piece, you know, whatever material they need, whether it's footage, we do have a print library, you know, books, magazine, you know, so you can't find everything online. So, mm-hmm. You know, we have a print library. So anything they need to get started on their shows, you know, they come to the library, they come to me, and, you know, I sort of get them started or steered towards what they need and stuff. So, and then every once in a while, like Hard Knocks, I'll be assigned to work on the show. You know, I don't edit a lot, you know, I usually just do a lot of research and handle the research library, but every once in a while with some of our other shows, you know, I sort of pitch in, and Hard Knocks is always a fun show to work on. It's a grind. It's 5 weeks, you know, it's nonstop footage. It's every day, you know, but it's a fun show to be a part of. So that's mainly my day-to-day chores, you know, at NFL Films.
I'm sure the Hard Knocks has got to be some long hours during those 5 weeks also.
Absolutely. Yeah. So, I mean, I'm not up as much as our senior producers and obviously our directors who are on site who usually shoot, you know, almost 20 hour days, 18 to 20 hour days. But it is a grind, but like I said, it's such a good show to work on, and a lot of people love it. You know, people love that behind the scenes type of look and feel. So it's an honor to work on that show.
And it's a great show to watch, too. It's very enjoyable. Now being at NFL Films for 25 years, you were able to work with the folks that put the NFL Films on the map in Mr. Ed and Steve Sable. What an amazing time. It had to be very educational for you working with those two.
Absolutely. I started right when Ed was retiring. So I didn't have as much experience with Ed. He would visit every once in a while and come back in the building. So I had a lot more interaction with Steve. Steve was great to work with. I mean, he was awesome. You know, you think he's the president, and you know, but he was always around. His door was always open. It was never locked or shut, you know, or you never saw him in the hallway. Like if you had a football question, a filmmaking question, you know, anything like that, he was always around to help you out. And so it was a tremendous privilege to have him in that building and to bounce ideas off of. You know, I mean, he would stop by the library and say, you know, he would always ask, hey, do you need something, Chris? You know, like he was always looking to make your job better. You know, I saw him do it with the producers and he did it with me. He said, hey, what do you need? What's going to make your life and your job, you know, better, you know, because he was all about making the best football films, you know, filmmaking and making the best football film. He lived for that, you know, so he wasn't like just a figurehead or pop up on TV. He loved filmmaking and just talking film. So yeah, it was a privilege to be around him until he passed away, to experience that and learn from him.
It sounds like he must be as genuine as he was portrayed on television that we watch as he is in person then, because he seemed like he was pretty high energy and very passionate about the game.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, that was who he was. And that came across. And like I said, he cared about you, you know, whether you're, like I said, whether you're running the research library, whether you were a 40-year veteran or whether you were working on Hard Knocks, or whether you were just doing a small little banquet piece that 50 people were going to watch at a banquet. He was there for you and he'd help you make everything better, because he knew what you were doing was representing NFL films and he wanted NFL films to be first class. And, you know, so, yeah. So what you saw on TV, what you saw as a genuine person, that's who he was in day to day.
Well, they started a great thing, and you folks there today are continuing the great legacy, because you have a great thing going there at NFL Films, and we really appreciate the work you do. We have a real tall task tonight, so we better get started here, as we have the most substantial players in the NFL's 100-plus years of history that wore the number 26 on their backs. And our challenge is to come up with a top 10 that we can agree on for the best of the best that wore that jersey number. Are you up for that challenge tonight, Chris?
Absolutely. Yeah, it's like I said, it is a deep list, I'm up for it.
Okay. Now, generally where we start off is the Pro Football Hall of Fame sort of gives us a leg up in our discussion, as they've identified 6 enshrined players that wore the number 26 at some point during their pro careers. And the Pro Football Hall of Fame says that Herb Adderley, Patty Driscoll, Benny Friedman, Paul Krause, Ty Law, and Rod Woodson all wore the number. Now, there's a little bit of controversy there, because in my research, Patty Driscoll, I could not find him wearing the number 26. And I went to my friend, and I'm sure you know him, Joe Ziemba, who is like all things Chicago football, especially the Cardinals. And, you know, Patty Driscoll played for both the Cardinals and the Bears. And Joe Ziemba went through all his game programs that he owns and all the books he has, and he could not find Patty Driscoll in the number 26 in the NFL either. And I don't know what you found in your research.
No, I mean, if it was, it was just for like one game. He wouldn't be on my, he's not on my top 10. So,
okay.
I mean, if he wore it for more than a season, then yeah, you know, I mean, Driscoll was one of the best triple threats, you know, two-way players of his era. But if he only wore it for one game or maybe two, like, then that doesn't make the top 10.
Yeah, I agree with you there. Okay, so really got 5 of those that we're going to really focus in on, I'm sure, then. If maybe that's a good place to start, is to start with our Hall of Famers and just present them and tell a little bit about them, if you don't mind.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's a good list. But like Driscoll, I think Friedman falls in that same category. I mean, Friedman's great, too. You know, like I said, probably the first great, you know, quarterback and passer, you know, in NFL, a little bit before Sammy Ball, you know, but Freeman only wore it 3 years too. And they were at the end of his career, you know, with the Detroit Panthers, and he wasn't actually very good. you know, his best years are with Cleveland Bulldogs and the New York Giants, you know, where he was lighting it up. So I took that in consideration where, hey, you know, you actually have to be as productive in the number 2, you know, just because you wore it, you know. So Driscoll, like Friedman, sort of fell short for me, because I think Friedman's best years, it's almost like Adrian Peterson, if you saw it, he wore 28, but he wore 26 the last 2 years, you know. But, you know, they were decent years, but they weren't his production. It wasn't his 2000 year. So I would lean towards them not making the cut. Obviously, for me, I mean, they're number one and number two on my list is Herb Adderley and Rod Woodson, you know, so there's no question. Right. I mean, I would put them at one and two for wearing the jersey number. So, you know, if we're going to have two slam dunks, then those are probably your two slam dunks. For me, especially for Hall of Famers, you're going to start with that list. Now, Krause is an interesting one. I don't know how you feel about Paul Krause. He wore the number in his first 4 years with the Redskins. He did not wear it for the Vikings. Now he was super productive in those 4 years, right, with 28 picks. So he's borderline for me. You know, I'll have to see how you feel about him. Just because I think, as we get into some of these other names, especially the running backs, and quarterbacks are very heavy with the number. He starts up there like, oh, I want to put him up. And then all of a sudden he starts sliding down, you know, because I look at these other players and like, you know, 4 years with the number, does that, you know, I mean, I'll just throw a name out. We'll probably get to somebody like Raymond Claiborne. Well, he played 15 years, very productive. He's not a Hall of Famer, but, you know, he's with the Patriots, 15 years wearing 26. I might put him ahead of Paul Krause. You know, I know Krause is a Hall of Famer, and you know, but 4 years is four years production, because his better years were with the Vikings. You know, he went with some Super Bowls. He was on a Super Bowl type of defense, and he affected that. So for me, I, like I said, Krause kind of slides down as we get into some of these names.
But the only thing that I mean, I agree with you about Krause, but the only thing that's compelling about him is he was an All-Pro three times, but two of them were in those first 4 years with Washington, and he was wearing that number 26 there. So, you know, so half his time of wearing the 26, if you look at it that way, he was an All-Pro. So, I mean, that's kind of interesting. And two of his eight Pro Bowls, he was wearing a 26. So he indeed had four productive years with that number on. But like you say, you have people like, you know, Claiborne wearing it for 15 years and some others that are wearing double digit years that were that number their whole year, career. That makes an interesting discussion for sure. And I also definitely agree with you with Rod Woodson and Herb Adderley being automatically one and two on our list. But maybe before we get too far into the others, maybe we ought to, you know, just bring up some of the stats of Herb Adderley and Rod Woodson.
Yeah, I mean, Adderley, obviously, you know, is huge. You know, 12 years he wore the number with the Packers and the Cowboys. You know, 48 picks, he had five Pro Bowls. But for me, some, or at least the added bonus is, I do think you should help your team. You know, so his, you know, what, six titles or seven, you know, like he won one Super Bowl with the Pack or one Super Bowl with the Cowboys, and then he wins, you know, what, five championships and two Super Bowls with the Packers. I mean, he's a part of this great franchise, you know, and that's very impressive to me, you know, and the same thing with Woodson. I mean, Woodson, you know, won a Super Bowl, you know, I mean, 17 years. I mean, he's got over 70 interceptions, 11 Pro Bowls, you know, six All Pros. He was a member of the 75th and 100th anniversary team. Or 75th anniversary. And then, you can't be any better than that, you know,
right.
You know, and he had a lot of the interception returns for a touchdown. You know, he was part of a really good Steelers defense, he was part of really good, you know, Ravens defense, you know, later in his career. So, you know, so those two, they're so special, you know, special players, you know, I mean, you know, Woodson could actually return kicks too, you know, especially early in his career, he was a really good returner, kick returner. So those two players, and they played the position as well as anybody. I mean, they were technicians, you know, you couldn't catch the ball on them, you know, you know, they would never be out of position, you know, and things like that. When you watch them play and you watch them on film, like, you know, there's a lot of things they didn't do wrong. You know, they were always in the right spot. Their technique was always great, you know, so it was, they're two tremendous players. I mean, like I said, when you think of just quarterbacks in general, let alone wearing a number 26, they're up there as top, you know, five, you can even put them in the top five, top eight of all time, you know, cornerbacks and stuff. So, you know, and Woodson actually played a little safety later in his career. So, you know, tremendous, even just all around player and stuff. So, you know, That's why when we started this number, those are like your two slam dunks, you know. Okay, Adderley, Woodson, now my bottom eight. Now the next eight, now we get a little bit into it. Like I said, people might have Krause up. Oh, there's a, like, you know, I'm not even, like I said, I'm not even sure Krause makes my top 10. So, but those two were definitely, you know, by far head and shoulders above everybody else.
I totally agree. And one added note, you know, I'm from Western Pennsylvania and a Steelers fan. So Rod Woodson had one of the greatest restaurants ever when he was in Pittsburgh. And I was, you know, we were sad to see Rod when he left and went to some other teams in the NFL, especially to the rival Ravens, you know, eventually. But his restaurant leaving, that was a big tragedy too, because that was quite the hot spot in Station Square to go do before games. Great food there and some great adult beverages, as we'll say. Okay, well, like you said, we're going to get into some interesting waters now. Those two are definitely in. Now we've got eight more to select from, and we've got a whole bunch of defensive backs and running backs that we're going to have to, you know, scan through here and try to figure out who comes up next in the tops. Now, I was thinking maybe we should talk about them as position groups to go through them and maybe check off some people that, okay, they're still in contention, or maybe this person's off, and then go through the other position group and then try to, you know, collaborate on coming up with those other eight positions. Does that sound fair enough?
Yeah, that's fine. Sounds good.
Okay. You want to go with the defensive backs first?
Yeah. I think they're a smaller group than the running backs, but still, you know, but I like the names. Yeah. So, I think the only safety, you know, that I had in the equation, I think there's a couple, it's George Sames, who I think's a little underrated, you know, I mean, sort of gets lost. But, you know, 10 years with the Bills, he was part of those two AFL championship teams in 63 and 64. Then he played for the Broncos his last 3 years, you know, 22 interceptions, he had five Pro Bowls, you know, three AFL All-Stars. And to be a part of a two-time sort of AFL champion, you know, I think he was, you know, like I said, he's the only safety that I might put in the equation. I mean, obviously there's guys like Chuck Cecil, Dick Geron, who played a little bit or wore 26, you know, we're decent players, but same, like I said, when you combine some of his All-Stars and his Pro Bowls, I mean, five Pro Bowls, and then he also helped the Bills win two championships. I think he makes the list, as the safety. And okay. Then the cornerbacks, then there's two cornerbacks I thought that stood out above the rest. There was like Michael Downs was one player that I looked at, but he had no Pro Bowls, you know, so I thought, wow, that's very odd. The guy played, you know, very good for the Cowboys in those years, especially in the 80s, you know, had a lot of interceptions, you know, almost 10 years with the Cowboys. But he didn't have any Pro Bowls. He wasn't elite, you know, to where, to me, Antoine Winfield, who played 14 years as a corner, and Raymond Claiborne, who we mentioned a little bit earlier, played 15 years, mostly with the Patriots in his last 2 years in 90 and 91 with the Browns. I mean, he's 15 years, he's 36 interceptions. He has three Pro Bowls and one Super Bowl appearance. And Winfield was similar, you know, 25 interceptions, had three Pro Bowls. So, like I said, they're definitely a notch below Adderley and Woodson, but you're talking about two. I mean, both of them almost played 15. I mean, Claiborne played 15 and Winfield played 14. They were physical players. They played good in the run and in the pass game. I mean, Winfield was only like 5'9", 180 pounds, and he was really good in the run game. He could play the pass game as well as anybody. He could play man. He could play zone. And Claiborne was a very good, you know, cornerback, you know, throughout the 70s and the entire 80s. So to me, they're very similar. I mean, as we get into the running backs are really similar, you know, it's going to be tough to separate. But to me, Claiborne and Winfield were same as a safety. Claiborne and Winfield as cornerbacks were ahead of guys like Michael Downs, Casey Hayward, who's a current player, you know, Dick Geron was a safety, you know, I think even Ray Rhodes wore number 26. And if you know, Monday Night Football, Lewis Riddick wore number 26, but their careers weren't quite at the level as Claiborne and Winfield. Although they're named, people know Rhodes as a coach and Riddick as an announcer and as a scout, you know, But to me, Claiborne, so, you know, like I said, Adderley and Woodson are up there. The same as a safety, you know, head shoulders. And then you have Winfield and Claiborne, you know, sort of that sort of next level, you know, worthy of top 10.
No, I don't disagree with you there. Now, just to mention, we said earlier about Ty Law. Ty Law only wore the number 26 for one season in 2009. And I think he was with he wasn't even with New England when he wore that. He wore with the Denver Broncos. So I think he's probably, even though he had some great numbers too as a defensive back. So if there's listeners out there, say, hey, well, you know, you said Ty Law. Well, that's probably one of the criteria, only wearing it for one season, that maybe doesn't put him on that list with guys like Claiborne and Winfield. Did you agree?
Absolutely. Yeah. That's why I forgot he was in that modern. I was focusing on the two-way players with Driscoll and Friedman, but Law was the same way. You know, like I would put Krause just ahead of Law because Krause, like I said, was a 4 years, and he had some of his more better individual years. He didn't have the Super Bowl success, or at least getting to the Super Bowl. But Law, yeah, I mean, Law is a great player, but as 26, like to me, Claiborne and Winfield, for their longevity and the way they played, was much more than Law. So yeah, Law would not make the cut either.
They were a much more substantial number 26 than Law was in his 1 year. Absolutely. or Krause in his 4 years. I agree with that. Mm-hmm. Okay. Is there any other DBs that you want to like to bring up?
I don't think so.
I had some names like, you know, Van McElroy, who had 9 seasons wearing number 26 with the Raiders. You know, his numbers, he had 111 games, 31 interceptions, 1 touchdown. You talked about Benny McRae, were the number 26 for 10 seasons with the Bears and one with the Giants, 133 games, 27 interceptions, 4 touchdowns. They're just some numbers to throw out there. I'm not sure that they make the list, but definitely they were substantial players that were the number 26, just like, Michael Downs. And I think you said, did you mention Charles Romes also?
I mentioned Chuck Cecil. I didn't mention Romes. No. So,
okay. Yeah. Charles Romes. You know,
I mentioned Casey Hayward's a modern guy wearing 26. But,
okay. But, you know, Romes is, Romes is another one. Wore for 10 seasons with Buffalo, 156 games, 28 picks and a score. So they're all about the same type of statistics, same amount of, you know, those three gentlemen I just talked about, but not sure that they make the list. They definitely don't surpass Winfield or Claiborne with what they did. I don't think.
They were always a little less on the list as I was going through it. Yeah.
Okay. I guess it's time to get into this running back horde we have here, because there are some good running backs in here, and it's going to be, I think, some tough decisions here to make. And some of them, their numbers kind of surprised me. I don't know if the same happened for you.
Yeah, I mean, for me, when I looked at the running backs, the list kept increasing and increasing. I'll talk about the guys who I thought. I mean, there's three guys that came up very short, so I'll mention them. One's a modern guy who maybe 5 years from now, if we do this again, he's up on this list. But Saquon Barkley, you know. It's just, like I said, just not enough of a career yet to know. But I would assume maybe he's in that discussion. And like I said, Adrian Peterson only wore it, I think, the last 2 years. So they come up short. A guy who I like I said, when I first saw, you know, some of the players that wore, especially from the running back, I'm like, oh, but he was very limited. I think it's only like 4 years in the NFL, really, was Lionel Little Train James, you know, with the Chargers, you know, very explosive, you know, unique player, but he didn't do as for as long as I thought. You know, I was like, wow, you know, and it was really like two monster years. You know, he had some of the kick returns too, and so I liked him, but I was like, well, he comes up way short when you start mentioning some of these other names. And the other one, who we go back to the 50s, is John Arnett, you know, of the Rams and stuff, Jaguar Arnett. So his stats are really good. You know, he's 7 years. He had over 2,800 yards rushing, 4,800 yards from scrimmage, 36 total touchdowns, 5 Pro Bowls, and then the 1 All Pro. And then he did some kick returns too and stuff. But but was never, you know, like I said, was a very good player at the time. But with some of these other names, you know, like just like Krause, he started just getting bumped down a little bit, you know. For me, there's two names that stood out. I'll talk about them initially, who I really like. Obviously, Clint Portis, you know, 9-year career, over 9,000 yards rushing, 11,941 yards from scrimmage, including receiving, 80 total touchdowns. He was Offensive Rookie of the Year, 2 Pro Bowls, you know, helped 2 franchises, you know, along the way, you know, was very good with the Broncos, you know, and very good with the Redskins. So I think he stood out a little bit better, especially when you talk about, you know, Le'Veon Bell and maybe Deuce McAllister, who was similar era. Portis to me was a little bit above them. And for me, just because I think his versatility, and he did it for 2 teams, you know, his numbers maybe, you know, they're not bad, you know, but to me, Wendell Tyler was tremendous, you know, was a tremendous player with the Rams, you know, who went to the Super Bowl and then did it with the Rams in the Super Bowl and then did it with the Niners, especially the 84 team. I mean, he was very dynamic, both in the run and the pass game. That's why Walsh liked him a lot, is that he could use him in a pass game too. You know, he fumbled a little bit, but he made up, and he was one of the most unselfish players, like, especially when they brought him in. They also drafted Roger Craig, and they played Craig at fullback, and they played Tyler at halfback, but they were somewhat interchangeable at times, you know, like with Craig. So Tyler, at that point, you didn't have a lot of halfbacks blocking for the fullback, but in Walsh's system, they would go out for passes. They would block for each other, you know, and stuff. And Tyler would do it, you know, and he was very unselfish, you know. His 10 years, he only made 1 Pro Bowl, but, you know, over 6,300 yards rushing, 8,100 yards when you counted receiving, you know, 66 touchdowns. I mean, that's a lot of touchdowns for a guy who, you know, played for just, you know, 10 years is still a long time, but near the end of the career, he got beat up a little bit, you know, in 85 innings. And so those 66 touchdowns came in like 8 years, you know, so, or even his rookie year, was it? So I like Portis.
That number surprised me with how many touchdowns he had. I didn't expect, you know, I knew he was a great back. I didn't realize he had quite so substantial yardage and touchdowns. That kind of shocked me.
I mean, you look at Le'Veon Bell. Bell's great. I mean, Bell's, you know, over 6,400 yards rushing. He's almost over 9,000 yards, but he's only got 48 touchdowns. You know, you know, he's got the 3 Pro Bowls and obviously the 2 All Pros, but, and he's a great, you know, dual threat, you know, out of the backfield, you know, he can catch and run, but, you know, when you look at it, well, he's only got 48 touchdowns, you know, and Wendell Tyler had 66, you know, and they're approaching about the same amount of years now, you know? So, yeah, so I think Wendell Tyler, you know, wearing number 20, like I said, he was very good with the Rams. He was very good with 2 teams. It wasn't just 1 team. He was very good 2 teams. I like Portis and Tyler. They're sort of slam dunks for me. And even Le'Veon Bell, I mean, he's the next on my list. I mean, definitely very versatile, was a dynamic player there for a couple of years. He's kind of slowed down now, you know, missing that year, I think really killed his momentum of being, you know, a borderline Hall of Fame guy if he kept it up and stuff. So so he's versatile, like I said. If he's close to over 9,000 yards total, but for 48 touchdowns, you know, and the 3 Pro Bowls and the 2 All Pros, you know, it was a very good, you know, so he makes my top 10. And then we get into a couple more names if you want to hear these names. Now these guys are like I said, they're all similar guys. I had a very hard time separating them. You had Lydell Mitchell, who played for 8 years. He had 6,500 yards rushing with 30 touchdowns, over 9,700 yards if you include receiving, and 47 total touchdowns, and he made 3 Pro Bowls. And he elevated that Colts team. That Colts team was, you know, somewhat competitive in the 70s, you know, with Burt Jones. And Roger Carr. So he did help the team a little bit. Then you had Robert Smith, who's 7 years, who retired kind of early. He was 6,400 yards rushing, 30 touchdowns, only 7,536. So he wasn't as involved in the pass game as maybe like Bell and Tyler were, you know, 2 Pro Bowls. And then Deuce McAllister for me, 8 years, over 6,000 yards rushing, 49 touchdowns, and then 7,800 if you count his receiving yards, and 54 total touchdowns, 2 Pro Bowls, and helped elevate that team in the 2000s, you know, to be a little bit more competitive. So, so those three, like I said, when I started adding the quarterbacks and George Sames was my one safety, all of a sudden I got a little bit of jumble here with I think Bell makes my top 10, but then Mitchell Smith and McAllister, you know, I mean, if you take some of the guys I've mentioned, you know, I think that's 11 names. So somebody's definitely coming off, you know, I think Bell and Mitchell for me are on the list. So then it comes down to Robert Smith or Deuce McAllister. So, so I don't know how you feel about some of these guys.
Well, I mean, a couple observations. I was surprised how Le'Veon Bell so far in his career is almost identical in statistics to Lydell Mitchell. That kind of surprised me. The big difference was, you know, Mitchell having more touchdowns receiving than Le'Veon Bell. I would have thought that would have been the other way, you know.
Yeah.
And you know, and also the rushing. You know, Lydell Mitchell had 10 less rushing touchdowns than Le'Veon Bell has so far. But if you look at the end of their stats, you know, Mitchell has 47 total touchdowns. You know, Bell has 48 touchdowns. Mm-hmm. They both have, you know, just over 9,700 yards of total offense. So they're a very similar player up to this point in their Bell's career compared to Mitchell's entire piece of work here. So those two are the ones I'm teetering on, but if you look at what Smith did in his seven seasons, I mean, it's pretty dramatic. I mean, 4.8 yards per rush, 44 touchdowns, you know, a year less than what we're looking at Bell and even Mitchell. And he's right there with them in touchdowns and about 1,500 behind in total offense. Boy, it is a tough one. And the same thing with McAllister. He was more heavy on the rushing portion of his yardage and his touchdowns. That's where most of those came. Wasn't as productive in the passing as the other ones were. But there's another name worth mentioning. I don't think he's to the caliber of what we've just been talking about, but Preston Pearson came up on my list, at least to be under consideration, because he wore the number for 14 seasons. You know, played with multiple teams, including the, you know, Steelers, and most famously with Dallas. And he's another one, but he was pretty much a backup running back on all those teams. It was behind Dorsett, was behind Franco Harris, and but still had some productive numbers to, you know, a total of 30 touchdowns, 6,700 yards. But I don't, like I say, I don't think he makes that list of 10. So let's go. Okay. So you're at 11. I'm probably right in that same ballpark with like the same names, but let's go for sure. Our ones that we're in, we're saying Woodson and Adderley are definitely in. And we both agree that George Sains should be in the third spot. And I think we're both in agreement that Claiborne and Winfield should both be in. Correct.
Yeah.
So that takes us to 5. Now we got those other 5 names to come up, and it's basically these running backs, or maybe one of the DBs comes up into it. I'm sorry, Clinton Portis is another one that I think we both agree on.
Yeah. And Tyler, did you want Tyler?
Oh yeah, and Wendell Tyler. Yes.
So that's okay. 1, 2, 3, 4, 7 5, is what I have. 6. So So to me, those 7 were clearly, those were kind of like my 7. And then Bell was 8. So,
I agree with that.
Okay. I agree with that. Yeah. So then it comes down to me, Mitchell, Smith, and McAllister. So I would say Mitchell is my 9th. Like you said, I agree with him. I think his number surprised me. I think he was a very good player, you know, and did a little bit more overall than you think, you know, like you said, he's similar to Le'Veon Bell. And most people who probably follow the modern game think Bell is great. Like, oh, wow, he could do everything. Well, Mitchell was a similar player just 20 years earlier, you know, so, or 25 years earlier. So, so Mitchell would probably be my 8. So it comes down to what, Smith and McAllister?
And possibly Krause.
Krause. Yeah. So to me, Krause comes up short. That's what I said. He kept going down, kept coming down. So unless you like Prowse better than Smith or McAllister, maybe I'll leave that up to you. So, because I could go either way. I could have went either way with Smith or McAllister. I think my gut's saying, like you said, because I think if Robert Smith didn't retire early, because I think he was healthy enough, he had a very good year his last year. I think he ran over 1,500 yards his last year. And my gut says if he even plays two more years, you know, he could literally run for 10,000 yards. You know, I mean, he was already at what, 7,500. So, or at least nine, like he's up there with Portis, and he's more of a slam dunk, you know, then he might be closer to 50 touchdowns too. And that's much more impressive than maybe what McAllister or Mitchell did. So
I agree with you. I think it should probably be Smith, because just what he did in his body of work in those 7 years is tremendous. You know, 4.8 yards per rush. That's pretty substantial, I would say.
Yeah.
Okay. So 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. Okay. I'm missing. I have nine names down. So I'm missing somebody that we, so let me go through them again. Woodson, Adderley, Portis, Mitchell, Le'Veon Bell, Wendell Tyler, Robert Smith, Antoine Winfield, and George Saints.
Yeah.
So
Claiborne's the only one you've missed.
Claiborne, I mean. Okay, that's who it was. Okay. Thank you. Okay, well, I think we did it. I think that's our 10 best that as of right now in NFL history that wore the number 26 that were for some period of time. We had some good criteria there and a great discussion. That was fun.
No, I liked it. That's when you invited me and you said and you gave me a couple and I looked, I thought 26 would be very fun to debate. So I was glad that we got a good number that had some names like that. Yeah, cause like I said, there's some names that I kind of forget, like, you know, like Wendell Tyler that are not Hall of Famers, like Wendell Tyler, Lydell Mitchell to me, and Raymond Claiborne, like, you know, a few guys that stood out, like, hey, these are really good players that happen to wear 26, you know, that there might not be Hall of Fame, but they might not ever make the Hall of Fame, you know, but they're really good play. They're really good football players. Like, I would want Wendell Tyler on my football team, or Lydell Mitchell. They were good football players that you would want on your team. So
absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. Well, before I let you go, and I appreciate you helping us out in that endeavor with these number 26s. But you are, you have quite a few books out there right now. Matter of fact, I just told you before we came on, I'm getting ready to read your Red Grange book, which looks fantastic. What do you have going on right now? Do you have any projects coming up or any books that we can look forward to?
Actually, I do.
Okay.
Excuse me. It's along those same lines as Red Grange. If you like, especially the 30s, and especially Chicago Bears. I'm working with the Nagurski family, so I'm writing a book on Bronco Nagurski and his life, you know. So they liked what I did with Grange and sort of wanted that sort of same type of treatment. So I was like, yeah, you know, he's an interesting guy. You know, not only with the NFL, he was a world champion wrestler too in the 30s. I mean, he actually quit the NFL to do wrestling. He could make more money wrestling, you know, in 1937, 38. So he went into wrestling, and he actually came back for one more year during World War II to play, which is an interesting thing. But yeah, so I'm sort of back in with the Bears a little bit, that history and Broncos life and stuff. So it's been really good. So as of now, I'm actually starting the writing process here in March. My deadline's in October, so we should see it sometime in the fall, around training camp of 2022, you know, next year. So if you like Grange, if you like Dutch Clark, it's probably going to be similar to that type of story. You know, with definitely a really interesting, you know, a guy in Bronco Nagurski.
Yeah, that definitely sounds. I mean, there's a lot of connections because Grange and Nagurski were teammates for some period of time too with the Bears.
Sure. Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah, a couple of years there, you know, where they won championships in 32 and 33, and then the sneaker game in 34, which they could have won, but they lost with the switching of the cleats to sneakers. So
yeah, that's one of the great stories in NFL history, there.
Yeah, never gets old.
Yeah, that's for sure. Now, how about, I mentioned a few of your books at the start, and we just talked about a few here. I know you have a plethora of other ones, if you want to plug some of those too for the listeners.
Yeah, I mean, I like all my projects, but, you know, like the Red Grange one that came out in 2019 when NFL celebrated its 100th year was a very interesting project. So I recommend that one. It's a little in-depth, you know, it's over 400 pages, but it tells the story of sort of the NFL's first superstar. One of the other big favorites of mine is one of Joe Carr in the NFL in the 1920s and 30s. I think people don't realize how influential he was. You know, when the league got started in 1920, they elected Jim Thorpe as the president, but he was mainly just a figurehead. He was an athlete. He wasn't an administrator. Well, Joe Carr from 1921 to 1939, before he passed away, he almost 20 years, he's the one that sort of laid the foundation, you know, with contracts, territorial rights, the rule book, you know, I mean, actually, as much as I love NFL films, well, he actually did an NFL instructional video in 1938, you know, where they said, this is what the NFL's, you know, this was 30 years before NFL films was founded. And they did an instructional video. He did the first record and fact book, you know, so he sort of does these things that the NFL sort of leans on now, sort of the building block. So that project was very interesting to do. So like I said, that's one of my all-time favorites, you know, so like the Grange and the Carr and the Dutch Clark book, you know, if you're interested in that type of era players, you know, I sort of relate it to some people. If you're a baseball fan, these are names like Ty Cobb and Babe Ruth, you know, and you know, Lou Gehrig and Christy Mathewson. Like, if you know baseball history, or even if you don't, you know, the names of Ty Cobb and Babe Ruth. Well, Dutch Clark and, you know, Joe Carr and Red Grange, these are similar people in the NFL. And so if you're looking to learn about that type of history, you know, I think these books sort of provide that. And that's why I like doing them. They sort of preserve that history for future generations. You know, as much as I love the game now, you know, I mean, I love watching NFL on Sundays. You know, I love reading about Joe Montana and, you know, Jim Brown and, you know, Tom Brady and Peyton Manning. But some of these old sort of pioneers, they deserve their sort of stories being told too. So that's why I like sort of grabbing them, you know, just because some people don't know them quite as well as some of the modern players, and they deserve sort of that their recognition.
I agree with you. This is sort of a magical time. And, you know, you had almost everybody was a two-way player. So you had to be good on offense and defense. You know, you had linemen kicking field goals and drop kicks and, you know, all kinds of crazy things, very little padding or equipment safety wise or rules to protect players as it is now. So, you know, men playing football back in those eras of football.
Sure.
So it's very nostalgic and very interesting to a lot of people. And yeah. I'm sure you have a lot of people enjoying your book. We got some great things to look forward to in the future with you. We got a lot of good reading to catch up on for my part. Sounds like a lot more books than I anticipated. I got to get to my library to read up on, because this is some great stuff. And Chris, we really appreciate it. Do you have any social media or anything you want to throw out there if anybody wants to follow you?
Yeah, I'm on Twitter. You know, it's Stevie Willis 83. So if you go on Twitter, I post things about my projects, but I also post a lot of football history stuff. You know, I also write for a website called Pro Football Journal. I'm assuming maybe some of your listeners know Pro Football Journal.
Absolutely.
You know, .com. You know, John Turney does a really good job with that. So I write some articles, especially when I have time. You know, you know that, you know, with life and, you know, work and family and everything else, you know, I wish I had a little more time to even write as much as I do to contribute. But I know Turney does a really good job with that website, because it's all about history. It's not, you know, like, there's enough websites to find the news of the day and the transactions and fantasy and stuff like that. But if you're looking for a little quick, you know, read here and there, you know, so Pro Football Journal, so those type of things, you know, you could check out online or social media. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, once again, we appreciate you taking the time to spend with us for this episode. It was very interesting. You had some great detail and knowledge that you shared with us, and we really appreciate it. And we hope to have you on again real soon on the Pigskin Dispatch.
All right. Thanks for having me on. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Peeking up at the clock, the time's running down. We're going to go into victory formation, take a knee, and let this baby run out. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you back tomorrow for the next podcast. We invite you to check out our website, pigskindispatch.com, not only to see the daily football history, but to experience positive football with our many articles on the good people of the game, as well as our own football comic strip, Cleat Marks Comics. Pigskindispatch.com is also on social media outlets, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and don't forget the Pigskin Dispatch YouTube channel to get all of your positive football news and history. Special thanks to the talents of Mike and Gene Monroe, as well as Jason Neff, for letting us use their music during our podcast.
This podcast is part of the Sports History Network, your headquarters for the yesteryear of your favorite sport. You can learn more at sportshistorynetwork.com. Hey there, Sports History fan. This is Arnie Chapman, a.k.a. the Football History Dude, and I wanted to thank you for stopping by to listen to another episode here on the Sports History Network. Our podcasters are passionate about uncovering and sharing sports stories from yesteryear. And if you didn't know it already, we have over 30 shows across the network covering all sorts of sports history topics. In fact, here's a glimpse into one of our awesome podcasts here on the network.
Do you wish you knew more about the 100 seasons of the NFL? You're in luck because you found the Football History Dude podcast, where each episode is a journey back in time to learn about the rich history of the NFL. From the founding of the league in an auto showroom, all the way to what it is today, America's favorite sport and a behemoth of an industry. My name is Ernie Chapman. Football is my passion, and I want you to come along with me each week to explore the yesteryear of the gridiron. So hop on board my DeLorean, and let's get this baby up to 88 miles per hour.
How about that? I bet you're super hyped to go listen to that new podcast, right? Well, to learn about this show and all the other podcasts on the network, head over to sportshistorynetwork.com/podcasts. Again, that's sportshistorynetwork.com/podcasts. Head over there today to find your next favorite sports history podcast.